Hello and welcome to As Yet Unnamed Podcast with Caridwin and Richard.
Formerly known as Is This Thing On?
Formerly known as
As Yet Unnamed Podcast.
Formerly known as
Check Sibilance.
Okay, so we're back to talk about the Scorch Trials, which, as we said earlier, was the Empire Strikes Back of this wonderful young adult dystopian trilogy. And the Scorch Trials starts, I think, just kind of immediately after.
Well, it starts with a dream that made me wonder if we'd accidentally started the wrong movie, because it's him in the keg elevator going up.
Thomas.
Yeah. But it's just a bad dream.
Oh.
And it's like, oh yeah, okay. So right. Then he immediately pops out into where they were.
Right. And so they, like, at the end, after they've watched Clarkson's video, they are, you know, rescued by commandos and jump into a helicopter. And
right. Then because there are zombies after them now.
Right. So then they land at some place, sandy place, and there's this big, sketchy, dystopian-looking building there. And so they're hustled inside, and there's clearly, like, people attack, like, zombies attacking, and they go inside, and it's this facility, like, one of those, like, gross, kind of semi-military-looking facilities that's just made out of concrete and grossness. And the guy in charge, oh, and I forgot to say, I feel like they just totally tipped their hand on this one. Like, after we see Clarkson and she's like, yeah, I'm totally dead now. Ha ha. Sorry. What, like, the last shot is of her being like, well, that went very well. Now we've got the kids in part two. So they totally just give away that, like, they're just being taken by the organization that ran the maze, and they're going to the second stupid phase of their stupid plan.
Right. Which is, as it turns out, just another kind of maze.
Right. Oh yeah.
Because it's still the Maze Runner.
Yes. But
part now two. Now we know about Wicked. WCKD. Wicked is good. They keep saying this. Wicked is good because it's not wicked. We just don't know how to make acronyms very good.
Okay,
but
no,
like
no,
that's
but,
okay.
No, no, no. But I went and I looked up the stupid acronym because.
Oh no, they say it at one point, right? Like Wicked is like the. Like World Catastrophic Kill Zone Department, which is the dumbest.
That
is the dumbest acronym.
No. World in Catastrophe Kill Zone Experiment Department.
I thought it was just WKCD.
I think that the movie makers realized that having it be like a whole ass acronym that was actually literally WICKED is so stupid and awful.
Because like nobody at that point would be like. So, should we, you know, does our acronym spell a word?
Does it spell anything?
It reminds me of something, but I'm not sure what. I'm sure it's fine.
Are we evil? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, you've got you know, your strategic homeland, whatever, shield. That's a great one. You know, they didn't even have to, they were like, we're working on it.
Right.
And it's like, what they worked on was just using the acronym, which conveniently spelled shield. Like, nobody had thought of that before.
Right.
And this one just accidentally says wicked, and it's like, well...
Right.
We just need a PR campaign. It'll be fine. We can't change the name now.
We can't. And it's got the word kill zone in it.
Kill zone, because that's the only thing they could think of that started with a K. Because it's wicked.
It's wicked.
This whole movie is just it's wicked good.
Wicked good. Oh, Lord, help me. So, anyway, yeah. So, like, the movie, like, they spend all of this time hiding footballs. All the time.
Yeah.
And then when they actually could have a bona fide, like, minor mystery, like, they're taken in by this kind of sketchy-seeming group, but maybe they're on the level. But we know they're not on the level. We know that's already been spoiled by the previous movie. Like, and moreover, like, the first person they meet who's in charge of the facility is fucking Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. Like, there's
which
no
was
world.
The most awesome slumming. When he showed up on screen, I was like, thank the Lord. This movie is amazing.
This is amazing.
It's amazing.
I was so so on deck for it. And, like, the best thing about Littlefinger is that, for whatever reason, man is, like, manfully trying to wrestle down his Irish accent, like, the entire time and completely failing. Yeah, he's having a hard time
choking him down. Which is, it's kind of funny with this movie because, like, the one guy that has an accent is Newt, who has a British accent. And, like, even Galley, who is a British guy, has to do an American accent, which he does passably. And it makes me wonder if they didn't do it based on how well the actors could actually contain their native accent.
No, but
and then they were like, you know what, never mind. You just do whatever.
No.
Like Kevin Costner trying to play Robin Hood. Just, you know what, you go with your American accent. We're not even going to try and voice coach you.
Oh my God. Winona Ryder in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, man.
It's just like a complete kill zone.
The kill zone department.
It's a kill zone department of British English.
Yeah.
Whew. Anyway, so yeah.
Anyway, so he shows up and it's like, oh, this is our assassin. Like, he's not necessarily known as like a, you know, a strongman action movie type. I mean, he's not really muscular. He's not really like, I mean, they could have gotten Jason Statham. They could have gotten Matt Damon.
No,
except
no.
Except all of those guys were busy and they were like, the what now? The Maze Runner? That does not sound interesting to me.
No, but I still think Littlefinger is just great because he does like that like smarmy like face twitch. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, yeah, I mean, and he's got that weird, like, falsetto voice, which just sort of makes you worry about how exactly he's planning on killing you.
Yeah, so, anyway, but it is really telling that they cast him. So, like, not only do you know, but you really know that this place is bad news. But all these kids come in blithely because they're stupid and they were literally born yesterday.
And all they can remember is the flash of Wicked is good.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember nothing else, just remember that Wicked is good.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the PR campaign kicking in. Right. You know, I'm sure they had a little jingle, Wicked is good.
So yeah, so they come in and they're given showers and they're like given really, really depressing barracks to sleep in. But they're excited about it. Cause
prison cells. They're prison cells because they lock from the outside.
Right. But they've been, you know, sleeping in trees. So this is cool. And,
yeah.
And
then they get to go into a big cafeteria with all of these other people their same age.
Right.
And a lot more girls this time because after the first one, they were like, guys, we have a problem and that there are no girls here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so then it turns out that there are all these other kids from all these other mazes all over the place and that they have all ostensibly been rescued. I mean, we know that they've just been taken out of those mazes and brought to whatever this facility for whatever evil purpose, right?
Puberty. I mean, the reason is puberty. This is all just like this whole thing is like to psychologically prepare kids for growing hair in weird places. Because there's all of this stuff. It's all a big mystery. No. I don't have any memory of any of this, but it's, you know, the whole thing psychologically plays like, I'm totally worried about where I am and what I'm supposed to be doing. Where's my locker?
I guess. I feel like that's really generous. I think that is extremely generous.
Yeah,
so they're there for a little while and
I mean, I was going to make some sort of metaphor about the maze being, you know, you have to navigate this maze of personal choices.
Oh, fuck you.
But yeah, I don't think there's a deeper metaphor there.
No,
if there is,
really
it's like
isn't.
It's that's it. That's the whole thing.
It's just
as you see.
Can you even say that anyway? So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But so they
hustle his girlfriend off, and he gets mad about it because there's plenty of other, you know, chicks in the cafeteria, and yet it's Teresa who he really wants to hang out with.
So she's been hustled off, and I think mainly the things that... Oh, excuse me.
They don't even really explain why ever that she was hustled off other than... Well, I mean, I think maybe because, as we find out later, she's actually a doctor...
Yeah, like, I mean, she says she has her memories.
But then they didn't hustle him off, even though.
Right, and that's another
thing.
So
it just doesn't make any sense.
Like, ostensibly she's a doctor, and I think he must be the same, except that they're both, like, 12. I mean, they're both really young.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so...
Well, and if they're... And I mean, he ended up being immune, even though we find out much later that they also put kids who are not immune into the... Yeah, none of the mazes, but you know, that was just sort of added in at the very last minute because they needed to have one of the kids show up.
Right. Oh, infected. Speaking of things that I looked up on Wikipedia, there's apparently two prequels, and these are also the kind of thing that will make you mad because it turns out. Oh my god, I love this so much. It's so stupid. It turns out, like, all of these kids, like, all of them, and then a bunch of other people that we meet later that really shouldn't have anything to do with them, they all, like, grew up together.
So they were all friends beforehand.
They all grew up together, and it's totally, like, fucking Clifford's Puppy Days or something, you know what I mean?
And that totally explains the bromance with Thomas and Mino. Because, yeah. I mean, there's no real reason why those two should have that much chemistry.
Their love transcends amnesia. But yeah, I choose to pretend like that didn't happen because it's so like in the Star Wars Episode One, when it turns out that Darth Vader and C-3PO and Greedo and all
and
of these...
And you were there. And you were there.
They all hung out together in Tatooine. And I was just like, but... don't have to have everybody know each other before they know each other. It doesn't make any sense. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I think it was just sort of trying to explain all of these things that are completely inexplicable, and then it just made them even dumber.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But anyway, that ends up, like, they get locked in the cell after some aggression, and then some mousy-looking kid... who was in the maze that was all girls except for him, which is like that. Now all of a sudden they're starting to do some weirder ass experiments. I mean, what are they really trying to prove here with like the all dudes and one right. chick? And then there's all this chicks. One mousy guy, and like they're all, you know, I mean, everybody's like really good friends. You bond in the maze, you know. I mean, that's
right.
That's how it works, I guess. Anyway, this kid has figured out that the massive security hole in these prison cells is the enormous air vents that you can just pop in and out of.
Just everywhere.
Which nobody thought. It's always amazing that nobody thought of that, where they're just like, you know, how are we going to get air into these cells? Oh, I know, a human-sized hamster tube
that just
has, like, magnetic grates on it that you can just pop on and off at will.
Yeah, it's great. So he goes up with the mousy kid and discovers that they're like wheeling bodies into some room and they never get wheeled back out.
Right.
So
which is funny because he's like, they never really leave. And I'm like, how do you know that's not the front door? They're wheeling them out, waking them up and giving them also a backpack full of clothes, $10 and a bus pass. Like, you don't know.
Well, also, is he up in the grate all day long?
Probably. I mean, what else is he going to do?
I feel like maybe people would notice he was missing.
Yeah, well, he only does it at night, which is apparently when they bring the bodies in, and then...
Yeah, well, you know, anyway...
Not these, during the day.
These scientists are clearly kind of stupid anyway. So then the mousy kid and Thomas go on a little adventure to get into the secret body room, and it turns out that in there is like the Matrix-style bunch of people hanging...
They're harvesting their precious bodily fluids.
Right, they are totally...
By hanging them up by their armpits. Which is totally the most efficient way to drain somebody of their precious bodily fluids while keeping them alive. You know, they totally would not lose their arms to gangrene.
Right, no. You know, certainly, that will certainly not cause bed sores or anything. Nothing.
No, definitely not under their armpits.
No. And in there, so Littlefinger comes in and Giant... screen Patricia Clarkson says, okay,
turns out they're working together. He didn't save them from Wicked. He is Wicked.
We already knew that, though. That's the thing that makes me crazy. We already knew that.
I don't know that we did. I think that was the first time it was explicit that he's working directly with President Coyne. Because that's when, you know, Thomas finds out and he's like, oh my God, everything I've been told is a lie. And it's like, I mean, you've only been here for 2 days, so it shouldn't come as that big of a shock. Because
right. I mean,
it's not like you trusted this guy to begin with.
As far as you know, like, you have been alive for an entire week. You have an entire week of memories.
But every night they have this lottery where it's like, all of these kids, you just totally won the lottery and you're going to a farm upstate, you know? I mean, like... and they all disappear happily, like, what was it, the island?
The island?
Where they're like, yeah, now your organs are going to get harvested for the rich people whose clone you are. Bye! Yay! And then they clap. They actually clap they on their way out. You know, I mean, clap. And the number of kids in that cafeteria means that, and the number of kids that they call, it's like within, you know, a week, you would run through all of the kids. And I think the kids would start to notice, like, look around and you'll see. They said that one guy, the mousy guy, had been there the longest. And it's like, why wouldn't they pick him?
Oh, he'd been there a week. Just a week.
Oh, was it only a week?
Yeah. They said he's been here the longest and it's been
a week. So they're just like continuously harvesting these maze kids because that's where we find out that there are other mazes. Uh-huh. And so all of these amazing kids are being harvested now in the cafeteria, which just seems weird. Anyway, there's something in their bloodstream they want. Something about the cure.
Yeah, but anyway, but Clarkson is super mad and she's like, well, I need to come in and harvest all the... You have to like... put them all in the armpit hanging thing. Like,
do it all now.
Right now. You do it all tonight. So I was just like imagining like go rustle all these kids up and be like, okay, time to be armpit hung.
Yeah. But I mean, we've all had that job, right? Where your boss demands that you work over the weekend and it's a stupid arbitrary deadline.
Yeah.
And you're already doing as much as you can anyway, but fine.
Yeah.
We'll hang up more kids by their armpits. It's not going to be a good show at the end when all of their precious bodily fluids get dumped all over the floor because we're moving too fast.
Yeah. I work for the U.S. Census this year.
Yeah. Which I'm is not going to exactly tell any stories.
But anyway, yeah, so then they discover that they have to not only, as everybody is evil, but they need to get out of there right now.
Right, so then it's a race through the air vents where they're crawling.
Right.
And
they have to go get their friends, and then
they have to go get their friends, but at the same time, Littlefinger is walking back to get his friends, and somehow he manages to beat a man who's walking by crawling through the Jeffries tubes.
Yeah.
Which is pretty spectacular, I think. Yeah. I mean, there should be an Olympic sport in crawling through the air vents because he
elbow crawled so fast.
Yeah, I mean, if he were in the Nakatomi Plaza building, he would have been so much better.
So much better.
So, yeah. But anyway, he gets all of his friends through the air vents, and then they end up in the steam tunnels and kidnap a doctor, you know, force their way out into the Scorch.
The Scorch. Oh.
Which, it's the whole thing. It's like, you'll never survive out there because we already know there's zombies. That are out there.
We know there's zombies, and they saw the zombies, but they seem really, like, unprepared for them when they finally do appear.
Yeah, they kept not picking up people's guns. Like, they would really easily dispatch them because, I mean, they're maze bred. I mean, they've been there for at least, you know, a couple of years of running through mazes, and that's equipped them to, you know, knock these soldiers over cold and then not take their guns. They kept leaving all of their guns behind, which is just...
Yeah.
It seems so weird. I mean, maybe they forgot what guns were in their amnesia.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, like, there is a scene when they're escaping when I became, like, a huge Minho stan, where he was, like, there's this guy who's gonna, like, shoot them, and he totally runs and, like, jumps at him with his feet and like, crushes him against the wall. And I was like, wow, that is so badass.
Well, and he stole a gun at that point. Who's the only person who ever stole a gun?
He's the only one with any sense.
He's the only one with any sense. I mean, it's clear to me why Thomas loves him so much. I mean, because he's the best. He's the best of all of those people.
He should have totally been the main character.
He really should have.
Because, like, Thomas is just a noodle.
Yeah, and there's not really anything exceptional about him except that, you know, he's Magical Thomas, you know?
Yeah, he's Magical Thomas.
But they make it out, and then they find a shopping mall, like teenagers do.
No. Okay, so this is the best. Like, I totally love the Dystopians shopping mall. Like, it is my favorite thing. And so they totally, like, slide down the sand. Oh, because they run out into Mad Max Fury Road, and there's this huge sandstorm going on. And they manage to escape, and then they slide down into a...
They find some structure, and there's, like, broken glass, and so they just run right in there. And it's like, I mean, at this point, they haven't seen any zombies at all. So zombies come running when there's a helicopter sound, apparently. But when you break out and you run away, and they, like, have people with flashlights and ATVs driving all over the sand, like, the zombies are asleep. So they go into this thing with the broken glass and a nice ramp of sand down to the floor, and I'm like, where do you think the zombies live? I mean, like, if you were a zombie, wouldn't you live there?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't live out on a sand dune because, I mean,
yeah,
that's no good. So they just walk in, start yelling. find flashlights. They find a whole, like, city of generators and lamps. And...
yeah, and there's, like, there's all this evidence that there are people there. That, like, beds and
stuff. But it's all dusty. And... I mean, they had been there. But what happened to all the people?
Right.
Let's go turn the lights on. That won't totally be a bad idea at all.
So they, yeah, so they find one corpse, which is a guy who's clearly killed himself.
Through autoerotic asphyxiation. I mean, the guy put a plastic bag on his head. Yeah. Or maybe he was being tortured. It's hard to say exactly what was going on there. Yeah, he was just sitting on a couch with a big lamp next to him and a plastic bag on his head, and that's totally normal.
Oh, yeah. And then, oh, the other fun thing about this is that I think maybe like 7 or 8 of them escape from the facility, but by the time they leave, and you don't see anybody die, but by the time they leave, they're down to like 4. Like, there's just all these convenient people that just vanish.
Yeah.
But
then there's get supplies because this is the place to get supplies. I mean, mm-hmm. they needed to have that place because there's this huge desert across. Nobody got any water at the, you know, breakout. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is right. just the convenient place to resupply. They, and just discover the zombies when they turn the one generator on, which apparently powers everything in the whole mall.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden the zombies come running, which just seemed really weird to me where they're like, you know, now that there's light, here come the zombies where they were yelling and had their flashlights before, so
yeah, what was the holdup? Yeah, I just didn't know. I mean, like, because sometimes zombies are only active during the day, and sometimes
they don't seem to be afraid of the daylight, but
sometimes they're only active at night. But these ones, I mean, again, I really just feel like they were probably one way in the book and a different way in the movie, and they are just like convenient zombies are convenient.
Yeah, they are just there to be menacing and to move people from point A to point B. So they all run back out to Zand again. They have to go to the mountains, which we were trying to figure out. I mean, if that was New York City, what mountains are those? You know, I mean, like, where are we? This isn't even planet Earth. This is a different planet completely.
Well, we haven't found New York City yet, though, have we? They've only been in the facility.
Oh, right. No, that's after the, you know...
Right.
The breakout.
Yeah. So they.
Because that's when they find the city where they, you know, they have to run through the desert city and whatever. They get cut off from their other people because they're trying to get to the mountains, which why were they even trying to get to the mountains?
No. I think you're getting ahead of yourself because I think that, once they run out of the
mall.
Once they run out of the mall, they're all like thirsty, tired. And they're all lying there kind of dying a little bit, and then they see lights in the distance.
Because they've been heading towards the mountains. Because, I mean, Littlefinger at one point in the conversation with President Coyne was like, you know, she asked if they'd found right arm yet. And I'm like, right arm! That right arm! So right arm is apparently, and he's like, no, they're living in the mountains.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So they do have a destination in mind. So
but the mountains are really far away, and it's like, you know, there's no way they brought enough water for them. And then they have to like carry the one guy who got scratched by zombies, mm-hmm. and is apparently turning into one of them now. And it's just like, you know, you're gonna carry him. You guys really need to learn how to triage better because you're all gonna die if you drag his ass along.
So they do find a settlement of some kind.
There are people.
And they are
sure what they're eating, but there are people.
And while they're running there, like, more Fury Road shows up, and, like, there's this huge, like, lightning attack.
They're gonna get killed by lightning on the desert.
And Min-Ho is totally struck by lightning in a really amusing to me sequence, because he, like, totally smokes. And I just
thought he's smoking.
The funniest thing.
Then they drag him indoors, and then there's all these zombies tied up, and then somebody shows up and is like, I see you found our guard dogs, which is totally what you would say to random people who show up. That's what I would do if people showed up. I wouldn't be like, oh, thank God, more people, or, you know, hi, I'm Joe, this is our settlement, because, you know, I mean, new fresh blood. Like,
yeah, I guess. But anyway, so this girl shows up, and she's like... totally apocalypse girl, you know, with the big boots and the big flary jacket.
She's totally Tank Brenda or Jet Brenda.
Jet Brenda, yeah. although I feel like the name Brenda is really not badass.
No, I mean, she is pretty badass. But she's like almost always paired with Jorge, who is her pseudo father, not really her father. That's who, you know, she takes them to meet him, and Jorge runs the place. And you're just sort of like, you know, okay, Jorge runs the place. This is great. You know, finally we can, you know, figure out where the right arm is.
But speaking of, okay, so she brings them in, and they're all like, they have all these zombies chained up, which are clearly like a
guard dogs.
Guard dogs, like deterrent for people.
There's like a maze you can walk through because they're all chained up.
Because it's odd, you see. It's a maze. It's
awesome. Another maze, right.
So she's like, "Oh, let me introduce you to our leader." They go upstairs, and it turns out that it's, and this is, they totally were like really excited about this cast because it's Giacomo Esposito, who was totally on The Wire. And a bunch of other, like, he's like a pretty serious actor. Because they spent a bunch of time with him in the, like, dark. And then he finally, like, turns around. And he's like, "I'm slumming so hard in this freaking movie."
But his master plan is, at least in front of all the bad guys, who's a, you know, it's a big biker gang full of Mad Max, you know, types, like, who are obviously ex-Wicked. So he's the boss. He's the top badass. And he's like, "I'm going to sell you guys back to Wicked because you're worth a lot of money."
Right.
And so he hangs them all upside down, which seems like a really bad way to treat your hostages.
Right.
Especially if you want them alive.
Because I next think day. I can kill you.
Yeah. I mean, like, hanging them upside down seems like a bad idea. But whatever. He's a badass. The motorcycle gang is all like, you know, like taser faces. They're like, hang them upside down.
That's so bad.
So then he decides at some point that he's actually, you know, a softy and wants to cut them down and take them to Right Arm! For God knows why, because he wants them to let him in, and it sounds like he tried to get in at one point and they rejected him because he's not special enough or whatever. The whole thing just seems so weird. That's, and it's like, let me take a bunch of these kids with me and then they'll totally let me in. And it's like, how hard could it be?
Well, because really? Like, my understanding is that they will take these kids because they're immune. They're immune kids. And then maybe they just let us in too, even though we're not.
Helped.
And I was like, these kind of sound like assholes too then. I mean, if you're going to be the resistance to people who are treating people who are immune like shit, maybe you should be a little more opening. You know, I don't know. The whole thing is just weird.
Well, they have to run away anyway because somebody stupidly called Wicked and was like, "We're over here."
Yeah, and so in a pretty badass sequence, like, most of them get out by going on the zip line. Whee!
Yeah, that I want to go to that Universal Studios ride. Right. That would be really fun.
So everybody but Brenda and Thomas zip line the hell out of there. But Brenda had to go back and get her iPad or something. I don't know.
She had to get a little box of spices in case they find a chicken. Some salt and some spices.
Yeah. So they end up having to go down.
And then
down.
She yells at him, like, "Hurry up!" And it's like, bitch, you just went back to your room to get a box.
Right. So then they can't go back through the...
The zip line is off limits now because there's stormtroopers there.
Right. So then they... Oh, and also...
he's turned the record on.
Esposito has also just blown up the whole building.
With one of the coolest fuses ever, though, because he turns the record on,
really cool
and
fuse.
There's like a line from the record arm to the middle of the record, and when the record gets to the end, then it makes the electrical contact, and it's blasted on loudspeakers throughout the place, so it's the perfect timer. You know, when the song ends, the place blows, you know,
up.
And so she's like, come on, and they have to like run and barely make it out.
And it's Patsy Cline, so that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. It's the Walking After Midnight, which is
we like it.
It's great. It's, you know, it's a great soundtrack.
It was actually like a pretty hilarious little set piece. I kind of
liked it. Yeah, I liked it. And then they get out, but then, you know, they're zombies. And then all of a sudden we're in the middle of the city.
No. But you can't just, they're zombies. So those guys run off. These two end up having to go down into the tunnels like a bunch of assholes.
The only reason they had to separate them like that, like in the story, is because you need to have Jacob get some time with Bella. Right? I mean, that is the only reason they cleaved them off from the herd
was so that
Jacob and Bella could be like, Team Jacob!
Yeah.
Because Brenda needed a chance.
Yeah, because, they definitely are trying to set up some really depressing love triangle between Thomas and Brenda and Teresa. Teresa being the, obviously...
PETA and Gail.
Right,
and but it's not the Hunger Games.
It's really sad though, because it's just like nobody is interested in Thomas, dude. Just quit trying to.
Yeah, they should have all been after Mino. I mean,
trying
like,
to make
that's
Thomas
really
happen,
what would have happened.
Right, he's just not interesting.
Yeah, he's just this guy.
You know. Anyway, so they end up down in the storm drains or whatever the hell, and you know, of course, there's going to be a bunch of zombies down there because nothing can be easy.
But it's another maze. Which way do we go? Left or right? And he's like, oh my God, I know all about mazes. We go this way.
From the time I spent a week in a maze.
Yeah.
And they
You know which way we should go? We should go the opposite way of where all of the weird tentacle zombies are.
Yeah. So, and that's where we learn exciting news about how zombies get gross, tentacle, like alien looking grossness.
They become plants.
Yeah, they look it's very
they just turn into roots on the wall, and then this is the you know, the adult phase of whatever the
right.
cordyceps
right.
fungus
it's,
is
it's
that's
very
growing
girl
in them
with all the gifts, but not awesome like that movie is. So
yeah.
They eventually get out because of obviously, and then they end up somehow magically in the middle of a ruined New York City. And so this is another one of those, like, how does this universe work? Because when did this happen?
Like, buildings have fallen over.
They have fallen over.
Something happened to make the buildings fall over. It wasn't age.
Right.
Because these kids, I mean, if that happened in their lifetime.
It, right. Like, because, I mean, that was.
Unless
that was,
it was a couple of hundred years ago.
The question we kept asking was, like, I mean, it's obviously answered by these stupid prequels that I refuse to acknowledge exist, but
yeah, it's weird how there was no Highlander 2.
Yeah, it's strange. They just went straight to 3. But if this happened when they were like 5, because there is a flashback scene where we see like Thomas's mom being like, "Here, take my kid.
Right,
it's the only way he's gonna survive." Like, can they even read? Like, who's teaching kindergarten in the apocalypse? Like, very rapidly, society loses those abilities because it takes an enormous amount of time and effort to educate children in basic things like math.
Yeah, well, especially when your whole society is suddenly directed towards building giant mazes and, you know, maintaining huge,
yeah,
you know, fleets
well,
of
clearly,
soldiers with helicopters.
Clearly engineers do just fine in this world.
Yeah. Well, and doctors, because they appear to rule the world. I mean, I don't see any other kind of power structure.
No!
Other than the doctor and Littlefinger, who's like the assassin, and they seem to have some sort of a detente where it's like, I mean, obviously we're here to save humanity, so the doctor is nominally in charge, and yet he seems to have free reign to sort of kill people whenever he wants, even though she keeps talking, she goes on and on about how they're the good guys and they're trying to save lives.
Right.
By, you know, shooting people who Littlefinger doesn't like. I mean,
right.
The whole thing is just really jarring, but that's, you know, that's fine. She can be in charge.
Okay, so the kids eventually meet back up in what I think is New York City.
There was a Brooklyn Bridge at some point, but that doesn't explain where the mountains are in relationship to
it doesn't really,
New York City.
Yeah,
so,
the geography's a little
who knows.
Emotional. It's an emotional geography.
Yeah, or just non-human.
Right, yeah. Alternate.
Or it's like Pan Am. It's like
right,
kind
cause,
of...
Because Pan Am
Not
doesn't...
that this is the Hunger Games, because clearly this is a completely different movie.
Well, it's really not as good. Anyway, so they end up in New York. They make it through New York.
But they need to get to District 13.
Right, and so...
Where Red Arm is.
Red Arm. But they eventually end up in... I mean, it's just part of New York, I think. This is where they meet Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, well, they go from, like, being chased by zombies to walking through a building onto a street where there's a bunch of people who look like post-apocalyptic survivors. They're not zombies.
No.
They're just people who just live there.
They're just regular.
I don't know what they eat or what they drink.
Right.
But they seem to have little lives, and when they find Alan Tudyk in his velvet suit, which apparently he still has, he's and way too much eye makeup. I mean, the guy just looks like he's
feeling but rough. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves because I kind of forgot. So the four of them went on ahead, and then the two of them come out later, and they're looking for some guy called Marcus, I think.
To get them, yeah, because he's the one who knows how to get to Right Arm.
Because he knows how to get to Right Arm. So they eventually, they're like, hey, are you, they're like, and we were like, Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. They're like, are you Marcus? And he's like, no, but you have to drink this and go in this party. And it's like, what the hell kind of Percy Jackson lotus eating crap is this? In no world, like post-apocalyptic or not, is there some bouncer who makes you drink something before getting in and that's the price of admission? Come on.
No, it doesn't make... It's completely like a Don't Do Drugs Kids tract written by somebody who has never been offered drugs a day in their life.
Right. Yeah, like, this is definitely the nerdy teenager.
Like, because I feel like, you know, all of those, like...
I feel like it was written by someone who's never actually had friends.
Maybe. But definitely, like, because, you know, all of those, like, anti-drugs things, it's like, there's all these people out there just, like, pushing marijuana on you all the time. And I'm like, dude, nobody's going to waste their weed on a buzzkill.
Have you ever read Chick Corea? Yes, they do. They not only, they inject it in your eyeballs.
Eyeballs.
In your eyeballs. And then, you know what you have to do? You have to turn tricks. You have to turn tricks in truck stop bathrooms. Until you finally find Jesus and then put Chick Corea tracts in truck stop bathrooms.
Well, that sounds amazing.
So we're in the Chick Corea universe of party. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that kind of party because it's like everybody's dancing in the post-apocalyptic rave, like the cave in the Matrix 2.
Like, really good time.
Where they're just like, and it's like dancing, only he's having a very bad trip and Brenda's not helping because she's like, let's split up. You know what you should do when you're at a party after you've been roofied? Split the fuck up.
Yeah. And then they, eventually, like, get back together, and she's like, hey, maybe we should make out. And he's like, maybe I should start imagining that you're Teresa, which is just, like, the dumbest and grossest thing I've ever seen.
Totally, because then he pushes her away, and it's like, you're not Edward. I mean, Teresa.
No, it's totally like that scene in Eclipse where, like, Bella has to get in the sleeping bag with...
Jacob,
because he has body heat.
Yep.
Oh God, I love teen dystopia so much.
Yeah,
so much. Because
I mean, the whole thing is just it's like
so good.
I'm going through puberty. Where's my locker?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, how did I end up here naked? Yeah. Anyway, so I can't remember how they get out.
Well,
of
because
this
they just
situation.
Sort of stumble out of it, and he wakes up, and it's like. He wakes up to, or like into the room where, you know,
well,
now all of a sudden,
else is.
Yeah, they're there. And like Marcus is getting his face beaten up because it turns out Wash is actually Marcus. Right. He was totally lying.
Alan
he said,
Tudyk
I don't know who Marcus is.
Yeah,
so,
he was having a funny.
Yeah. So he's definitely Marcus. He's getting the shit kicked out of him all Reservoir Dog style. Like, you know,
by
Jorge, who's now put on his brass knuckles and is, you know, extracting the data, which isn't really all that interesting. It's like, what, you know, where's right arm? And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, punches him harder. And he's like, oh God, stop. All of a sudden, I'll tell you, they're in the mountains. And it's like, but we knew that.
Yeah. It's really just, I mean, I feel like a lot of those actors got to be really, really hammy and it was really great. Like, obviously, like, excuse me, Littlefinger's having a really good time being,
But Alan Tudyk was wasted
he
in
was
that movie.
He
should have been
wasted.
Cast as a different character who had a little more longevity because he's the best.
And I feel like he was kind of, I just feel like him with the feather boa and the eye makeup, it's just not right.
I mean, I'm sure he had a good time doing it. It's just, it's such a waste.
Yeah, it was
like,
really
he's
not
he's the
good.
I'm a Leaf on the Wind guy. I mean, like...
Right. Well, or...
Now he's the, you have to drink this before you can go into the party
or
guy.
Or Tucker and Dale, or, I mean...
Or whatever, Four Weddings and a Funeral, or Death at a Funeral?
Death at a Funeral. Yes, yes.
Where he plays a very,
very
high
person.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. But anyway, so they, pile into his car. They steal his car. Mm-hmm. Drive into the mountains.
Into
further.
The mountains that are just outside of New York City.
New York City. I mean, it might have been Denver, but there's a huge river with the Brooklyn Bridge there. So I don't know. I don't know which.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Probably wasn't the Brooklyn Bridge. It's just a made up. It's like America-ish.
So
it's in
it's
the
Canada.
Mountains. In the Rocky-ish mountains. Yeah, it's Vancouver.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it's the Canadian Rockies.
They drive into and get stuck at the tunnel where there's the convenient roadblock and kind of dumb. I mean, this is the whole setup is totally silly because it's like this huge ambush valley where they're being right. shot at, and it's like, oh my god, stop firing, we actually know you.
Right, because it turns out the...
So there was no real danger at all.
The mousy kid and the people who were shooting at them were in the same maze together.
Right, because some of the women made it to Right Arm. Right Arm!
Right Arm!
Already.
So then they go into Right Arm, at which point we are introduced to Barry Pepper.
Oh, yeah. Which, like, made me want to watch Battlefield Earth so bad, because it's, like, the same character.
And he...
Like, post-apocalyptic Barry Pepper.
And he, like, treats it... I mean, other than the facial hair, like, I don't know whose choice that was, but that was a bad choice. But he, like, completely commits to that, really. Like, he is so that dude.
He really is. I mean, that may actually be who he is, but if it's not, he is the best actor in that whole movie.
And then also the other person we get to meet is Lily Taylor.
Lily Taylor shows up and I'm just like, Joe lies when he cries.
And I love her so much. Yeah. She also, like her ability to like get across like kind of empathy is really...
I was so sure that she was going to turn out to be Thomas's mom.
And when she did that, I was like,
boy, that's weird. You're just some doctor.
Yeah, because you were like, when she showed up on screen, you were like, Thomas, it's your mom.
Yeah, and it really wasn't.
And it wasn't, which is just...
It should have been.
It's really too bad.
Oh, well, it's fine. So she makes a cocktail out of his blood and gives it to Brenda, who had gotten bitten by one of the zombies. And she was going to turn into a zombie. And they almost didn't let her in. But then, you know, now she's got... Thomas blood, which is going to be important in the next movie. They keep doing these things that are going to be important in the next movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, okay. So she's fine. Everything's fine. Let's go meet the rest of the people.
Right.
And it's just this huge Red Dawn style Rocky Mountain camp
party
where, like, again, what are they eating?
But that was a temporary camp. That group of people were moving around.
Right.
So
what temporary food are they eating? You know, I mean, like, they have this huge, like, thing, and then, you know, I mean, everybody's sort of, like, partying, and then they're sitting up on the ridge looking down, and I'm like, oh, there's Eris with his girlfriends. Eris! They called down to him, and I'm like, at that moment, I was like, this whole place is getting bombed.
Right.
Like, there's no way they're not getting bombed.
They're all marked for death right now.
Because you don't yell down to your friend and you're like, oh my god, isn't this amazing? Nothing can stop us now.
Yeah, no, they're totally cooked.
And that's when Thomas sees Teresa up on the hill looking off forlornly into the distance, and he decides to climb all the way up there. And he's like, what's up? And she's like, nothing. And he's like, oh. You just want to be alone? I guess I'll climb all the way back down then.
No, but she's like, nothing. And then she's like, okay, but also, like, later when some stuff happens, I'm not going to say what exactly, but when that happens, just, like, don't really think really badly of me or whatever.
Yeah, I did it for your own good.
I did it for your own good, at which point it's like, here come the choppers.
And you're like, oh my god, those Russians totally put a tracker in that whole box of food that they dumped on the highway.
Well, right.
But it's an ambush.
Anyway, the whole thing is...
Yeah, so they all get blown up.
Yeah, well...
Which we knew was coming.
So, yeah, so Littlefinger, who just absolutely adores half hanging out of a helicopter, staring down over the destruction
That guy wrecking. If this really is the entire, like, world catastrophic kill zone department,
mm-hmm.
and it's the whole world...
Mm-hmm.
That guy is the biggest micromanager on the planet.
Of all time.
Like, he has to do everything himself, which is, I mean, that's what bad guys do best, is everything themselves.
Everything themselves, yeah. Because it's just really hard to get good help, because it's like they can't shoot at the side of a barn. Like,
well,
they wouldn't even be able to hit it.
They can't make decisions. Like, you know, if you leave it up to them, they'll just kill all those kids, and you don't want them to kill all the kids. Mm-hmm. You just want to kill some of the kids who you hate.
So they go in there, and they round everybody up. I think Thomas, because he was hanging out with Traitor Girl, was not rounded up first, and Esposito and Brenda were also, and they were like, we should just run away now, like, fuck all those guys.
Right, because Traitorisa obviously is no longer girlfriend material, so he might as well hang out with Brenda for a while. Team Jacob!
Yeah, Team Jacob. So, but he's like, no, I'm gonna be all self-sacrificing. So he goes back, and he's like, I'm Spartacus too. And I can't remember.
They line them all up to shoot them, and then they finally, like, Teresa manages to climb down off the mountain, and they're all like, oh, but she doesn't have to kneel down with them because she's a bad guy like us. Remember how she still has a memory?
Yeah, she's totally a bad guy.
Like, she set this whole thing up to, like, because, you know, she's making the world a better place by getting everybody captured. But we're not going to explain how that makes any sense in any world at all because, you know, football hiding, you can't just...
So everybody's...
You have to be shown the Matrix.
Everybody's feeling betrayed by Teresa because they were literally betrayed by Teresa.
Yeah.
So
then he tries, like, he does the suicide bombing trick to, like, you know, back off or I'll blow everybody up.
Right. At which point, Esposito and Brenda show up in the General Lee.
In the first of many Deus... Ex Brenda's.
It becomes Deus Ex Brenda over, like, she saves her bacon.
But always, like, it's almost always the two of them paired. Like, her and Jorge are like, she's the brains, he's the brawn.
Yep.
He'll drive while she
yep.
just sort of sits there telling him where to drive, I guess. So they, like, smash through the whole thing and, like, stuff exploding everywhere. So, like, a lot of more people can escape, but not everybody does. They get split into two groups. And in the best kind of Empire Strikes Back ending, that's kind of where we're
well,
left.
Well, and then they do end up capturing Min-ho, and he is taken
along with a bunch of other people,
but like a ton of other people. But Brenda and Thomas and
Newt
and Frypan. What's that guy's name?
His name is Frypan.
Is it Frypan?
That's what they call him throughout the whole movie. It's because he can cook.
I hate that.
Yeah, I know. There was a guy named Squiggy in the cafeteria, and everybody laughed. And I'm like, why didn't people laugh at Frypan? Is Frypan here? Because they all had their names. Like, Thomas remembered his name, right? Mm-hmm. So at some point, Frypan had to wake up in the bamboo prison cell and be like, oh, my name is Frypan.
Right?
Like, I don't know why I remember that, but at that point, I'd be like, I'm not telling anybody that my name is Frypan.
Yeah, I think
my name is Alpha Dog Badass. My last name is Badass. My middle name is Dog. Some people call me Dog. But definitely not Frypan.
This is totally like the scene with Ben Stiller in Mystery Men where she's like, what's your name? And he's like, Dirk Steele. And he keeps trying to, like, come up with badder-ass names over and over. And then she's like, that's not your name. And he's like, okay, it's Wayne or whatever not interesting name it was.
Yeah.
Roy.
It's Roy.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah. So, I think those guys are all fine. But then kind of most of the other kids, a bunch of the people from the right arm.
Right arm!
I just can't get over. Like, I knew this guy. I don't know how common this is. I knew this guy who, instead of saying right on, would say right arm, at which point he would hold up his left arm in a fist.
Right arm.
And so every single time they were like, blah, 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 right arm. I was like, right arm!
Right arm!
And
they never really explain why they're called right arm. It's the right arm of what?
Doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, definitely the left arm had no idea what the right arm was doing. Because they were this super mysterious force that.
So it ends on this sort of like semi-bummer cliffhanger situation where
there's going to be a Back to the Future 3. So let's just get on with Back to the Future 3 already.
Anyway, so, but I was just so unbelievably pleased by this movie. It was so much fun. There were zombies. There were post-apocalyptic cities.
Yeah, it was like some Mad Max.
There was
some
Mad Red Max, Dawn. There was some Red Dawn. I mean, there wasn't a movie that this didn't rip a chunk off of and put it in there.
Yeah, no, they were not afraid to throw it in there.
They were just, it was just this huge Frankenstein's crazy quilt.
And then once things started exploding, it was like there were so many, like, out of the frying pan into the fire jokes.
Right.
With Frying Pan, who kept living, which was just awesome.
Just kept living, yeah. God bless him.
Yeah, Frying Pan sticks around.
Yeah.
I mean, I was not expecting a guy named Frying Pan to have that much, like, longevity, but he really stuck around.
He really stuck around.
Which is good.
Yeah, and I would also just like to take a moment and point out that all that shit with the Grievers, like, all that shit is just never brought up again. Like there are these just...
Nobody even asked, like, wait, so why did you guys make the Grievers?
Yeah.
Like, what was that for? Because even when they walk into the you know, people hoisted up by their armpits being drained of their precious bodily fluids.
Right.
They first walk by the cylinders full of
Grievers.
Giant, like, larva, like griever larva.
Gross, never say that again.
Like, oh, that's where they come from. But they don't say why.
Right.
It was just like, it's like the alien, you know, the
You made it crawl back up.
I'll figure Weyland it out later.
Yes.
Weyland Yutani Corporation gets the aliens. They bring them home. They put them in tanks and make Grievers. And then they make a giant maze. And then that's what. That's why you have them in there. Because they were ripping off Alien.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Or so... Aliens. It was actually the second movie when they tried to go get them.
Well, because also, like, the zombies in the basement were definitely like aliens style because they were kind of like stuck to the wall by their like gross.
That's true. And actually it was really more Alien Resurrection when you have the whole scientists working with the aliens directly, but whatever. Anyway,
but then the other,
Back to the Future 3.
But then the other thing I wanted to complain about real quick, or not complain, I just wanted to mention it. Like this whole Wicked thing, which is like, their whole, and you get some sort of speeches from Clarkson about how, like, you know, like she's the kind of evil who doesn't think she's doing evil things, or like the ends justify the means. Like Littlefinger just likes shooting people in the face. That's just fun.
He is trying to save humanity too, though.
But also
he wants to save the right sort of people.
It's super fun to shoot people in the face.
Well, yeah, he's just doing what he's good at.
Right. But Clarkson, like, is that kind of bad guy that actually believes that she's doing the right thing. And then the traitor girl is especially that way. Like, she thinks that this is, like, a really, really good idea.
Well, and her stated reason is that it's like, you know, I was hanging out with my mom and she clawed her eyes out because of the hallucinations. And, like, that can't happen to anybody again. So I think that we should all sacrifice ourselves.
Right. We should become,
to create this,
like,
better world.
Blood
and,
bags.
You know, Let's go. Let's do that. Because there's definitely not a better way to do it than hang people up by their armpits.
Right, no, absolutely.
And drain them.
Surely that won't give them blood sores. So, but the thing that I think is so ridiculous about it is that, so my evidence of the population of the planet is like maybe like 500 people so far. And that's maybe like an upper estimate. I think like on screen, you know, there were 25 kids in the maze, maybe 7 get out. There's maybe another 50 kids at the facility. We don't know how many people are in the facility, but maybe another 50. Like, we have seen, like, zero. Oh, I guess we do see some people in New York, whatever. But, like, this is not, like, a thickly inhabited place. Where, and here is this Wicked corporation or whatever the fuck they are. I mean, are they a government entity? What are they? Like, what's their...
It's FEMA, but FEMA is not as interesting as Wicked, so they just renamed FEMA.
Okay, well, anyway, you know, they're like, blah, 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 this cure. I'm like, who are you curing? There's nobody left.
I think the idea was that they were going to cure the zombies running around. Like, you have to kill them while they're trying to kill you, but eventually we're going to... Like, the girl with all the gifts, like, we'll bring them all back. It'll be great.
Oh my god, but that's...
And they'll just magically be the same people.
I don't know. I mean, this becomes an even bigger problem, I think, in the next movie. But even in the first two, it just doesn't make any sense. It's like the Umbrella Corporation in the Resident Evil movies, where it's just like, you've literally killed the entire planet with your, like, viral fuckery.
Yeah, Raccoon City is empty.
Yeah, well, but
are you saving?
And eventually, not just Raccoon City, but everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
And so, like, what are you even doing anymore?
Earth.
Like, why are you still going to, like, they still, like, there's this endless supply of, like, 20-something guys to put in anonymizing costumes and have them shoot at people. And then that's it. Like, the entire planet is made out of red shirts.
Yeah. So, like Empire Strikes Back, this movie ends on kind of a low note, but it's you know, it's gonna, like, you know, bounce right back in the third movie, because we've had Traitor Issa has called in Wicked to blow up our Red Dawn encampment, and they get scattered. You know, Mino gets captured, and they kill
Joe Lies.
They kill Mary.
Lily Telly.
Taylor.
That'd be a very different movie.
Anyway, so they you know, it's definitely like Empire. It's like they're staring out the window at the galaxy, you know, wondering about the fate of their friend Han Solo, who's been encased in carbonite at Wicket. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the rap, which is like, and then he delivers that speech, which is kind of like, it was kind of like the end of the first Hobbit movie, or, you know, sort of like the end of the first, the Fellowship of the Ring, where it's just sort of like, as long as there's breath in my body, we're going to go find those hobbits. And then they
But it wasn't, out, it was wasn't, movie, okay, you know? But it wasn't anywhere near, I mean, this was no St. Crispin's Day. You know what I mean? Like,
no, he wasn't as good at it. I'm just saying there are some parallels.
Yeah, I mean, because it's one of those things that they kind of even lampshade in the text, where he delivers this, like, well, you know, they're all sitting around bummed out that, like, a bunch of people are dead and everything's ruined. And Thomas, like, gets up and he's like, all right, well, I'm off to infiltrate Wicked, BRB. And everybody's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's like, I'm going to now deliver the speech, which is completely unconvincing. And, like, that actor, I mean, he's fine, but, like...
He's no mean ho.
He's no mean ho. And he's also just not, I don't, whatever, he's just a guy, you know? And so he delivers a speech, and everybody's like, yeah, okay. And Barry Pepper, who does have a couple inspirational speeches, and man has commitment to material. Anyway...
Into that scraggy beard.
Into that beard, which is a sad, sad choice.
It's like he asked at the beginning, what's my motivation? And the director said, you are a redneck.
Yeah, but like a really, really earnest one. Like one who totally reads like Proust. Anyway, yeah, so Barry Pepper, who can deliver a monologue, is like, man, that was a good monologue. We're all with you, kid. And everybody just does the sort of sitcom style freeze frame where all like, they're all like
jump.
High five jump, let's go storm the Capitol.
Yeah, but I think what they were trying to do in that scene was establish that Thomas has become the new de facto leader of the right arm. I mean, you've got Pepper looking up to him now saying that was a great speech because that's where the speech came from, was Thomas. I think that's what they were doing at the end there, was sort of setting it up so that in the next movie Thomas can go off all half-cocked, and it just makes sense that he's got the right-arm people behind him now.
Yeah, okay. Right. I mean, I guess I just feel like this is just another instance of some completely mediocre white boy falling upwards his entire fucking life. Like, I don't see how he's earned anything here.
Yeah, which is just like life.
I mean, I guess that's maybe the most believable aspect of this entire series.
No, he doesn't deserve anything. His speech was mediocre. But you know what? Somebody had to give a speech, and he was there, and he was the white dude. So.
But, I mean, so is Barry Pepper, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, but he's an older white dude. You need a younger white dude to give a speech because he's better looking and less rednecky.
I guess. But, well.
I don't know. So, of the, like, I think it's kind of funny that of the three movies, I think this one is the most rewatchable. Which is hilarious because it's like, the third movie was just too long. The first movie was, I mean, it was fine.
It was too little.
It was called The Maze Runner, and it was about running a maze. But, like, this movie was just, I mean, I think there was a lot more. I like the parallels with Red Dawn a lot more. The gritty kind of post-apocalyptic, rather than the we live in a weird old Mayan temple.
Right. It's,
you know, we live in this horrible underbelly of a world.
Right.
And that's the stuff that I think is really cool.
And it also just, I mean, there's five or six locations, you know. I mean, they move from the crappy dystopian holding tank that they're in to the abandoned mall, to whatever the hell was going on with
that weird city.
Yeah, you know, New York-ish.
No, that was like the Barter Town from
Plumbo. Oh, yeah, it was totally Barter Town.
Because they all just sort of show up and they're like, what do you have to trade? You know, right. It's like, then you have to go like meet Tina Turner in her very heavy dress. But
And then to New Vancouver. And then to, I mean, it's just like, they go so
they
many.
They meet new friends along the way who will eventually turn into cranks, presumably.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I thought that was nice because then you can inject, you know, because the first movie never really had an opportunity for Team Jacob. And, you know, because now there's Brenda, who's like suddenly a possible new love interest. And, you know, so it's good that we have some new characters that the story can
right.
fully realized.
And this movie is also the one, I mean, because one of the things I love about crappy teen movies is all of the slumming actors. And this, like, per minute has the most slumming actors in it.
Scott, yeah, in addition to the original slumming actors from the first movie, you also have...
More slumming actors. And so, and I think the most, because then when you move on to the next one,
They just start killing them off.
Yeah, there's Barry Pepper, there's... Yeah, I mean, it's just everybody you've already met. There's no new, like, oh my God, I can't believe that Peter Dinklage is in this, or whatever.
He's not, though.
No, he's right? not. Okay. I don't think I would have remembered that. Yeah, I feel like I would have remembered that, too, yeah. but...
But yeah, no, I think, though, I'm not going to watch it, like, tomorrow, but yeah, I could see watching it again, and, you know, I wouldn't even need the flu to watch it. I could totally watch it, you know.
I would watch this completely healthy. Yeah, and also, I mean, it would definitely be, like, fun to have on in the background, because you could, you could ignore the, like elbow crawling through the Jeffries tubes all morning, and then just tune back in time for them to get chased around by zombies for 5 minutes, which is incredibly entertaining.
Apocalyptic cityscape.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's good times.
Yeah.
Good times. Let's watch it again.
All right, high five.